El Paso, Texas, July 29th, 1882. Renita had grown weary of spending all her time at Granny's boarding house, so Wes had agreed to take her into town on Saturday afternoons. The first two trips behind them, Wes began to relax, but not for long. They were riding past a livery barn. The first slug struck Wes in the left shoulder. The second shot narrowly missed Renita.
Get away from me!
Wes drew his gun.
You're hurt!
But I'm alive. Damn it, you could have been killed getting to me.
Jim Gillett came galloping toward him, his Winchester at the ready.
Where was he holed up?
In the livery loft. The varmint wasn't just after me. He was shooting at Renita, too.
You better ride on in and let the doc patch you up. I'll nose around and see if I can find any tracks.
Gillett met Wes and Renita in Dr. Winslow's office after Wes had finished getting patched up.
The Sidewinder's afoot. Plenty of tracks around the barn, but no way of knowing which were his.
About what I expected. Next time I'll just have to be ready to go get him before he can escape.
Next time he may get you dead center with the first shot.
With that, Gillett left the office.
Oh, I wish we didn't have to stay here.
We don't have to. I'm just not the kind to back off from a fight.
Even when they're firing from cover and you don't know when they'll strike next?
Even then.
I know you have your pride, but pride's no good to a dead man, and a dead man's of no use to me.
I've been dry gulched before by hombres who did a hell of a lot better job of it, and I'm still alive. I'm more afraid of them shooting you than hitting me.
We're afraid for each other. I'm glad you're afraid for me. Since Mama died, you're the only one who's cared.
St. Louis, Missouri, April 10th, 1882. When Nathan and Empty reached St. Louis, Silver was already there. As so often was the case, he was in room 21 at the Pioneer Hotel.
Where have you been? I got here yesterday.
I stayed an extra day in St. Joseph. I was only ambushed twice, and I reckon there might be a few more wanting a shot at me.
Now, let's not be bitter. You did the best you could. Even the government doesn't expect more than that.
Well, God forbid that I should disappoint them. Are you sure you've got no more phantom outlaws for me to track down?
Not at the moment. Maybe when I return to Washington. It's a shame you didn't get to Jesse in time, but Frank surrendered. If there's any money left from the robberies, he may be willing to give it up for a more lenient sentence.
It's even more of a shame you didn't think of that before I wasted 4 months of my life looking for Jesse.
It is. I'm good, but I'm not perfect.
Empty sat on the oval rug, regarding Silver in a quizzical manner.
Look at him. He's getting more like you every day, sitting there just looking right through you. And you don't know what the hell he's thinking.
I know what he's thinking. He's thinking it's time he was fed. We've been on short rations since Christmas because those damn people in Missouri wouldn't sell us grub.
Oh, is that all? If I feed you, will your sweet disposition return?
Maybe. Why don't you try?
Come on, both of you. After we eat, we can buy a passage on the boat to St. Louis.
I'm taking my horse because I don't know how long I'll stay at the McQueen's. When I'm ready to go, I am to go.
New Orleans, April 16th, 1882. Nathan and Silver rode around to the back porch of the McQueen's residence as they always had. Empty was already at the back door, expecting Bess McQueen to greet him. But it was Vivian who met them.
Hello, boys.
Barnabas came walking around the corner of the house, and Nathan could immediately tell something was wrong. It seemed almost as though Barnabas wished they hadn't come, and for some reason, Vivian's eyes refused to meet Nathan's. Something was wrong, bad wrong.
Barnabas, what's the matter? Where's Bess?
Her resting place is over yonder, by the horse barn.
When? How?
She died sudden a while back. She took sick and 3 days later she was gone.
God, I'm sorry.
So am I. She was a great lady.
You might as well come on in. The place won't be as neat as it used to be. Vivian and me, we've been away.
All of them sat down at the kitchen table.
Nathan, there's been some changes. We should have gotten word to you.
You didn't know where I was. Tell me.
Vivian and me are husband and wife. We were so lost without Bess, and being out here together...
Nathan said nothing as memories came flooding back. Memories of Vivian from the day he had first seen her in Dodge, half-starved, seeking her brother.
Well, congratulations.
Amen to that.
During a painful silence, Nathan's eyes were on Vivian, and the harder she tried not to look at him, the more surely it seemed that she must.
Nathan, it's hard seeing you again. I thought... Damn, why did you have to come back? Just when I thought I was free of you.
You are free of me. I have a woman in El Paso. I thought you ought to know. But I'm on my way there now.
Nathan got to his feet, put on his hat, and shook Barnabas McQueen's hand for the last time.
So long, Barnabas.
Good luck, Nathan.
Once they were safely away from the McQueen's place, Silver gave voice to his thoughts.
You did the right thing. You left Barnabas believing you hadn't come to take Vivian away, and you left Vivian believing you'd thrown her over for another girl. Give them time, and that'll draw them together. I know what that cost you, amigo. You won bueno hombre. The question is, where do we go from here?
I'm going to El Paso. You're welcome to ride along.
I'm obliged for the offer, but I can't see it accomplishing anything. It's a good 1,000 miles from here, and I'd use up the rest of my leave just getting there. I reckon I'll leave this horse and saddle at the livery and take the next boat north. I hope when our trails cross again, it'll be under better circumstances.
San Antonio, Texas, April 26th, 1882.
Nathan, it's good to see you again.
Nathan had swung by Bodie West's office as soon as he'd gotten into town.
Good to see you. What's happened since I was last here?
You won't believe it. Ben Thompson ran for city marshal of Austin back in 79 and was defeated. He ran again in 81 and was elected. Then it turns out he let his demons get a hold of him again. One night he was drinking at a saloon, and he and a man named Jack Harris rehashed an old grudge. Well, things went from bad to worse, and Harris ended up provoking Ben into shooting him. Thompson resigned right there on the spot.
Tarnation.
Actually, I'm glad you stopped in. I was wondering if, maybe, you might be interested in the job.
My God, why don't you suggest something simple, like me running for governor of the state of Texas?
I don't have that much influence. But I can get you appointed city marshal of Austin to replace Ben Thompson. It pays pretty well, and you'll be right here with friends. Come on, damn it. They need a good man. And there's nobody around here as qualified as you are. It'll only be for the rest of Thompson's term, and there'll be an election a year from this November. You'll be out of it the following January.
A little more than 15 months. I reckon I can stand it that long.
Meet me this evening for supper at the cafe, and we'll talk about it.
They had supper at a cafe where Nathan had eaten before, and Empty was fed in the kitchen.
I haven't heard from King Fisher in a while. Is he keeping his hands clean?
He has no choice. He's acting deputy sheriff of Uvalde County.
The hell he is. When did this happen?
In the fall of 81.
I'll have to get down there for a visit. Maybe around Christmas or the first of the year.
I'll help you get a few days off after the first of the year. Christmas is generally a time when all kinds of hell breaks loose and lawmen are needed the most.
Uvalde, Texas, January 10th, 1883.
Being a lawman don't take as much time as I allowed it would.
I'm glad to see you get such an appointment. I let Bodie West talk me into finishing Ben's term in Austin. And it hasn't been half bad. I think it's discouraged a few ambitious hombres who wanted to become fast guns at my expense. For a while, it seemed everywhere I went, somebody was forcing me into a gunfight, and I was killing men I didn't even know. It was that, or risk having them kill me.
I know how it is. It's shoot or be shot.
El Paso, Texas, December 2nd, 1882. When the Sandlin gang struck again, it was in a devastating manner that nobody was expecting. 12-year-old Jody Connors rode in at dawn and came bursting into the sheriff's office.
Sheriff!
What is it, boy?
They took my pa.
Who took him?
I don't know. They wore masks. Ma says hurry.
You get back and help your ma. I'll gather some men.
Quickly, Gill had gathered a dozen men, including Wes, and they followed Jody Connors north. Reaching the ranch, they found Mrs. Connors on the porch with a shotgun.
Sheriff, the road west.
We're headed for the border.
Let's go.
Slowly but surely, the trail veered southwest and then due west. But as they neared the Rio Grande, their quest abruptly ended. Revolving grotesquely in the breeze, a dead man hung from the branch of a cottonwood. Pinned to the dead man's shirt was a scrap of paper. Scrawled on it, in pencil, was a message.
One of yours for one of ours. Some of you stay here with this man. Mrs. Connors will have to be told about this, and I'll see if they have a wagon we can use. If they don't, then I'll send one from town.
Gillett started for the Connors Ranch. Wes rode with him.
I reckon you know what this is building up to.
Yes. Every time we kill one of the Sandlin Bunch, they'll ride across the river and kill somebody on our side, and they won't be particular.
You're going to become unpopular in a hurry. Since they can't get their hands on you, it appears they'll kill anybody they can catch.
And maybe I better give them a stronger reason for coming after me. Maybe I better begin wearing this Ranger shield instead of keeping it in my pocket.
Well, that won't accomplish anything. The Sandlin gang knows Rangers aren't allowed to follow them south of the border.
And I'm gonna do what I should have done before now. I'm resigning from the Rangers. Then I can follow these outlaws anywhere I please without the Rangers or the state of Texas being at fault.
That's just partially true. As a civilian, you're still not permitted to go into Mexico without official permission.
Then I reckon it'll be between me and the Federals in Washington. I just can't believe the state of Texas will object to me getting these outlaws any way that I can.
Neither can I, unless you're captured in Mexico and Washington gets involved. Mexico could officially give them hell and they'd pass it along to Austin.
How can I return this Ranger shield and get word of my resignation to Bodie West?
Get your parcel ready and give it to the stage driver along with $10. It won't hurt if you tell West in your letter what you're up against here in El Paso. In fact, if you're serious about resigning, what's the point in staying here? Sandlin and his bunch won't follow you.
The first and most difficult thing I had to learn is that a man, if he's gonna go on considering himself a man, can't run from a fight. Now, I've been beaten bloody and had the hell stomped out of me, but I never run, and I won't now.
Well, now, that's an admirable thing as long as you can live with it. But being shot dead by a gang of outlaws is a mite more permanent than having your tail feathers ripped out hand to hand.
Austin, Texas, March 9th, 1883.
I'm here to testify in court tomorrow. I reckon we have time to win a bundle at the poker tables tonight.
I don't always win. First time you're with me on a bad day, you'll be cured. Let's have supper first while we still have money.
Well, after that, let's go to the Cattleman's Emporium. I want to visit the upstairs where the naked women are.
Yeah, they're there to distract you, to take your mind off the game.
I reckon they got the right idea. When a naked woman can't capture a man's attention, the varmint might as well lay down and let somebody shovel dirt on his face.
Nathan and Fisher reached the Cattleman's Emporium just after 10 o'clock, and to their surprise, when they climbed the stairs to the upper level, there sat Ben Thompson. His top hat was tilted back on his head, and on the table before him was a bottle, a glass, and a substantial pile of poker chips.
Thompson, I didn't know you were in town.
Well, I purposely avoided you. Every time I come to this town, I get in trouble with the law, and you're wearing the badge. You've done me some favors, and I'm trying to avoid shooting you.
Thanks. We're here because Fisher wants to see the naked women.
Oh, I never mix business with pleasure, and gambling is business.
Well, I aim to play a few hands of poker. I've seen all these women before.
The trio spent some time at the poker tables of the Cattleman's Emporium, and Thompson was the big winner.
I'm on a roll. After supper, I'm going back up there.
I didn't do bad myself, considering I was mixing business with a considerable amount of pleasure. But I reckon I'll call it a day. I gotta be in court early tomorrow.
I ought to get up and go with you, King. It'll be the first time you've ever been in court when you wasn't on trial for shooting somebody.
You should talk, Thompson. Well, I remember the time you shot your
way... Oh, hell, if there was any justice, both of you would be doing life in Huntsville Prison.
Following Kingfisher's day in court, he again accompanied Nathan and Ben Thompson to the Cattleman's Emporium.
I can't understand why they keep allowing you in here, Ben. You don't come to look at the women, and when you leave, you always have a sack full of Emporium money.
I bought a membership in the place. It cost me $1,000. I come here as often as I can to win back some of my money.
El Paso, Texas, January 15th, 1883.
You'll have to wait for a letter from Bodie West accepting your resignation from the Rangers. If I may ask, when you're officially free, what do you aim to do?
I aim to see that the Sandlin gang learns I no longer live at Granny Bude Lowe's. I'll take my meals there, and Renita will be there. but I'll spend my nights along the border and riding to some of the surrounding ranches. I aim to see that nobody else is murdered by the Sandlin gang while they're trying to get to me.
By God, I've never seen one hombre so damn determined to get himself killed. There's hundreds of miles of border, and while you're sitting at one place, those outlaws will cross somewhere else.
But they won't be able to back me into a corner, killing someone else trying to get to me.
You're overlooking something, Wes. Sooner or later, with you riding at night, you're gonna have another fight with the Sandlin gang. I'll bet the little that I have, and all I hope to have, that Sandlin will murder some more innocent people. While the Sandlin bunch may not be able to find you, you won't be able to find them either. Are you prepared to take responsibility for their murders?
I realize they can pile all that on me, but if somebody doesn't go after the Sandlin gang, are they going to be allowed to have their own way forever? I think, if you'll recall, this bunch of varmints was stealing and killing before I ever killed one of them. If I back off and leave them alone, that's just as good as telling them they have a license to steal and kill as often as they like. There's a price on everything, Jim, and sooner or later, the people of Southwest Texas will have to pay. Running from a fight only puts it off until another time.
San Antonio, Texas, March 11th, 1884. Nathan came into his office that morning and sat down to read the newspaper. The front page article held grim news.
John King Fisher and Ben Thompson slain in shooting at Vaudeville Variety Theater.
Nathan went on to read that three men had ambushed Fisher and Thompson while they sat watching the show. Word of the shooting spread quickly, and it wasn't long before Bodie West came to Nathan's office.
An ambush is a cowardly act. The last resort of men who don't have the guts for a stand-up fight. Jacob Coy, Joe Foster, and Billy Sims were with Thompson and King Fisher in the balcony of the Vaudeville Variety Theater. Joe Foster was wounded and his leg is to be amputated. Coy and Sims have left town.
Nathan removed the city marshal's badge from his shirt and passed it to West.
Nathan, you're a fine lawman. Stay here.
King Fisher was a good lawman, and you see what it did for him. He and Thompson had their faults, but by God, they didn't deserve to die like that, with nobody to avenge them.
So you're about to take on another vendetta. Let me remind you, there is no conclusive evidence as to who did the killings. You're the last man I ever want to see on the wrong side of the law.
I'll take my chances.
San Antonio, Texas, March 12, 1884. Nathan went to the city marshal's office where he spoke with the deputy on duty, Ira Dement. He inquired about the shooting.
We have no suspects. All we know is that both men were shot at very close range from a box next to and slightly above theirs.
Then the three men in the box with Thompson and Fisher should have seen whoever did the shooting.
Not necessarily. The show hadn't started and the theater was still dark. None of the three with Thompson and Fisher saw anyone, so they testified. All we got from them was that suddenly there was a roar of gunfire. All they claimed to have seen was muzzle flashes.
I was told Foster's in the hospital. Am I allowed to talk to him?
No. The bone in Foster's leg was shattered and a doctor had to amputate it. The shock was too great, and Foster died early this morning.
While Nathan was in no mood for breakfast, he ate anyway, lingering over coffee. He thought back to the time, now almost 8 years ago, when Wild Bill Hickok had died in Deadwood, Dakota Territory. His death had been as senseless as those of Ben Thompson and King Fisher. Jesse James, while admittedly an outlaw and killer, had died with a slug in the back of his head. King Fisher had been just 30 years old, Ben Thompson 42, and Hickok 39.
My God. I'm 37 years old. I've been a wanderer for 18 years. How much longer do I have?
Suddenly he felt old, forsaken. Suppose he hung up his guns, called it quits, tried to settle down. He thought of El Paso, of Granny Boudlow's boarding house, of Molly Harrell. She was still a young woman, beautiful by anybody's standards. And he suddenly wanted to see her. If she still waited. El Paso, Texas, March 24th, 1884. Since the hanging of the Connors man, there had been a continued feeling of unease. West Tremaine made it a point not to be seen entering or leaving Granny's boarding house, and despite his haunting the border at night, he hadn't encountered the Sandlin gang. Renita became more distant, and even when West was there, they seldom spoke. To spare Wes the possible danger of riding in during daylight, Granny had begun feeding him breakfast before first light and supper well after dark. He had grown lean and hard, his eyes squinted from lack of sleep, and he carried his Winchester wherever he went, even to the table. Having been gone for so long, Nathan was a bit reluctant to just walk into Granny Boodlow's place unannounced. But he needn't have worried. When he arrived, the old Cajun woman was sweeping the front steps.
Nathan Stone, you come back.
Yes, I came back. Maybe I can stay a while this time.
Now, you sneak in quiet, Molly in kitchen.
Molly was in the kitchen, but Renita Wooten was with her. The younger girl's face went white when she saw Nathan. Seeing her fear, Molly turned.
Nathan! Nathan!
Nathan hadn't been sure how she would receive him, and her response exceeded his wildest expectations. She threw her arms around him. Renita, who had no idea who he was, had retreated into the dining room. Granny came in, shoving Renita back into the kitchen.
Nathan, this is Renita. She was Tremaine's woman.
Nathan grinned at Renita, who was blushing furiously and glaring at Granny.
A pleasure to meet you, Renita. I've been hearing about Wes. I'd like to meet him.
Oh, he don't come in daytime. Sandlin outlaws watch for him, and in the dark, he hunt for them.
What? He's after the Sandlin gang? Why?
Because he killed one of them. He won't leave here. They're hunting him, and he's hunting them.
Whoa, he makes me feel like a coward. He must be some kind of man.
He not a man. He just a boy.
He's as much a man as anybody in Texas or anywhere else.
I won't argue with that. I left here a while ago after killing one of the Sandlin gang. It was that or start an ongoing feud with him.
Wes is a strong man, but he's not as smart as you. He has this feud going and he won't run out on it. They're going to kill him.
He sounds like he'll take a lot of killing.
You see him tonight.
I'm looking forward to it.
That night, Wes came in with the Winchester under his arm. In but a few weeks, he would be 18 years old, but he looked older. When Nathan Stone stood up to greet him, he was as tall as Nathan. His eyes met Nathan's for only a moment before dropping to the Buscadero rig with its two matched Colts. When his eyes again met Nathan's, there was unmistakable respect in them.
I'm Nathan Stone.
Wes Tremaine.
Wes shook the offered hand.
I've heard of you.
And I've heard of you. You have friends in Dodge. Foster Hagerman and Harley Stafford spoke well of you.
I'm obliged to them. Bodie West, a friend of mine, told me about you.
Wes, we already have supper. You eat.
Wes was hungry, and he wolfed his food, eager to continue the conversation with this newly discovered gunfighter. Nathan said nothing, waiting until Wes had finished eating.
Now, I'd be interested in hearing about this running fight with the Sandlin gang.
Wes told Nathan his story.
Wes, you just go away like Nathan did, and the outlaws forget you.
I may wish I had done just that before it's over, Granny, but it's time I was getting back outside.
Nodding to Nathan, he took his Winchester and left. Conversation lagged after that. It was Molly who made the first move. She got up, nodded to Nathan, and made her way down the hall. He soon followed and found the door to her room unlocked. She was waiting for him, and for an hour, not a word was spoken. When she finally did speak, it was the very last thing he expected.
Nathan, the boy is a spitting image of you, and I get the feeling he's the same kind of hard-headed idealist you were 20 years ago.
What are you trying to say?
Ever since Wes Tremaine came here, he's reminded me of someone I felt I ought to know. Granny spoke of it too, so it's not just a fancy of my own. What can you do to fill in the missing years? Doesn't the name mean anything to you?
Nathan sat on the edge of the bed, his head in his hands, thinking.
St. Louis. February of 1866. Molly Tremaine.
You are Wes Tremaine's father, aren't you?
My God. My God, it must be, but how was I to know?
But he doesn't know about you. Why doesn't he?
Because she must not have wanted him to know. She must have hated me.
Tell me, Nathan. You've been running from her all these years, and now she's gonna haunt you through him. You must talk.
Nathan began to talk, slowly at first, but the words tumbled out as his emotions took control. He talked for an hour, until at last he was silent and drained.
Don't you think he should be told?
My God, no! She didn't want him knowing or she would have told him about me. I'll respect her wishes.
Oh, is that it? Or is it that you're afraid he'll hate you if and when he knows who you are?
No. It would be his right to hate me because he doesn't know all the story. I was as ignorant as a 19-year-old can be when I met Molly Tremaine. I joined the Confederacy when I was just 15, and I'd never been with a woman all my life. Molly was older than me, and she just took my breath away. I spent 2 nights with her before I got around to telling her why I couldn't stay, what I had to do.
So she told you to go to hell to get out and stay gone?
Well, she told me that and more. But it was a choice between what she wanted or the oath I'd taken on my father's grave.
So that's where Wes Tremaine gets his stubbornness. That's why he's so determined to stop the Sandlin gang.
Now that he knows I ran away from the fight he's facing, he'll be all the more determined.
Maybe not if you tell him who you are.
Damn it, no. If Molly Tremaine hated me that much, I reckon she's entitled to take her revenge any way she can. I don't know how you'll manage it, but you've spent more time with Granny than I have. Before she figures out who Wes is, get her to keep quiet, will you?
Well, I'll try, but it won't be easy.
Have you heard about King Fisher? He's dead.
Far as I'm concerned, he was dead the day I walked out on him. Nathan?
What is it?
Molly Tremaine. Was the first Molly anything like me?
Not really. You're beautiful, and so was she. At the risk of sounding like a damn fool, I'd have to say the first Molly took advantage and had her way with me.
Well, that sounds strange coming from you. The woman's supposed to say that.
Oh, hell, that didn't come out like I meant for it to. Have you ever wanted something so much, had your mind made up as to how it would be, that you hated the person who didn't live up to your dream?
Of course I have. That's how I felt about you when you rode away to avoid the Sandlin gang. But it wasn't just the Sandlin gang, was it? You were a rolling stone, and you weren't quite ready for a clinging vine.
Damn it, you could find work in a medicine show reading minds.
But I'm not like the first Molly. I believed you'd come back, and now you have. Will you ride away again?
No. I've been killing men and having men try to kill me for 18 long years. I'm tired. Tired of having men, even kids, that I don't know trying to kill me just to prove they're faster with a gun. That's what bothers me about young Wes. Before I associated the name, before I knew who he was, all I heard was how quick he was with a gun. Maybe that's what bothered Molly Tremaine, why she never told him about me. She didn't want him riding vengeance trails, a gun in his hand, and a lonely grave ahead of him.
You feel that's what you've been doing?
I reckon. What do I have to show for those 18 years except the men that I've left dead? All my friends have lived by the gun, and most of them are dead by it.
So you're gonna settle here, across the river from the Sandlin gang?
Why not? I can't name a town on the frontier where I can be sure I won't meet an hombre wanting to kill me to prove he has a faster gun.
What will you do in El Paso?
I don't know. I have enough money so that I don't have to do anything unless I want to. I'm to stay out of the saloons, and if I play poker, I'll stay with the low-stakes games.
Well, I like the sound of that. Since I'm partners with Granny, why don't we just stay here for a while?
That might be wise. Wes doesn't know who I am, but I'd like to stay close enough to side him if he needs me.
He's so much like you. Don't be surprised if he refuses any help.
In the days that followed, Nathan continued spending as much time with Wes as he could, without the boy becoming suspicious. But Wes Tremaine never wavered in his determination to destroy the Sandlin gang. One night after supper, he raised the lid on his watch to check the time.
Well, that's an interesting old watch. May I have a look at it?
It was left to me by my grandfather on my mother's side.
Wes handed the old timepiece to Nathan. Nathan had caught just a glimpse of the photograph in the lid of the watch, and as he looked at it more closely, there was no mistaking the well-remembered face of the young Molly Tremaine.
A beautiful lady, Wes. Is this your mother?
Yes. It's all I have left of her. She died when I was born.
Nathan returned the watch to the young man who was his son. No longer was there any doubt. And among the others in the room, Molly Harrell and Granny Boudlow had seen and understood. A month after Nathan's arrival, the Sandlin gang struck again. They rode across the river half a dozen miles east of El Paso, murdered a rancher and his wife, and then set fire to the house. They rode away with a dozen horses, escaping across the border. Following breakfast at Granny's, West Tremaine broke his long-standing rule and rode into town and went right to the town marshal's office to talk to Jim Gillett.
All hell is busted loose. The city fathers have telegraphed Austin for help from the Rangers.
A lot of good that'll do. They've already had two Rangers here, you and me, and our authority ended at the border. A Ranger can't be everywhere at once. I was riding the river west of town, and the Sandlin Bunch crossed the border a dozen miles to the east. I learned of it when I saw the glow from the burning house, and long before I could get there, the varmints had taken the horses and were back across the river.
There's only one way to get the Sandlin gang, and that's to lure them across the river for some definite purpose. But that can blow up in your face.
Yeah, like when they hung the Connors man.
Exactly. Then you'll have the whole county giving you hell because you were responsible for enticing the outlaws across the river. When I took the marshal's badge, I thought I could make a difference here. But I'm not allowed to do what has to be done, and I'm giving it up.
When are you leaving?
Just as soon as I can be replaced. The town council was after me this morning before breakfast. They wanted to know where the hell I was when Eli Danvers and his wife were murdered and their ranch house set afire. I had no way of knowing the Sandlin gang was coming, and even if I had known, they could have crossed the border anywhere along a 50-mile stretch. Damn it, I'm one man with one gun. Let them send for the Rangers.
I'll take the badge for a while, if you can arrange it.
I can arrange it, but are you sure that's what you want? I'd feel like I'm signing your death warrant.
I believe I can lure that bunch of owl hoots across the river. They want me, and I've kept out of their reach, waiting for them to make a move. Well, they made it, and I was too far away to make a difference. They have to think they can get their hands on me.
So you aim to set a trap with yourself as bait. There's just one of you, same as there's just one of me. They can always spring the trap, take the bait, and ride back across the river.
They can try. Get me the badge, and let me take a crack at it.
Gillett had no trouble getting Wes appointed as town marshal, but nobody at Granny Boodlow's favored it. Only Nathan Stone kept his silence.
They'll kill you. The only reason they haven't already is that they couldn't find you.
She right. You young, have pretty woman. Why you want to die?
Wes, you and Renita could make a new start somewhere else, far from the border. You don't owe this town anything.
I don't run from a fight, however unfair or uncertain it may be.
West Tremaine refused to change his mind. And when Molly and Nathan were once again alone together, Molly tried to get Nathan to intervene.
I didn't see you trying to talk sense into him.
No, and you won't. He's enough like me that it wouldn't make a bit of difference. He knows I ran out on a fight once, and the Sandlin gang has been a threat ever since.
Then if he won't take Renita and leave here, why don't we get away from here?
No, the kid's right. I ran away once. I won't do it again.
You're gonna get yourself killed alongside him.
I aim to be here if he has need of me.
I have need of you alive. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Well, sure it does, but I have to make up those wasted years. Is that so hard to understand?
I understand perfectly. He's gonna get himself shot dead, and you'll be right there beside him. Well, if I'm gonna have to live without you, we'll start now. I'm moving to another room. You can sleep by yourself.
Wes found himself in an increasingly precarious position with Renita. After her outburst following his appointment as town marshal, she said little to him unless she was forced to. To make matters worse, outlaws, presumably the Sandlin gang, raided yet another ranch, and while nobody was killed, all the stock was rustled. A week later, the town's request for ranger assistance was answered when Ranger Tom Webb arrived. He was a young man, not more than 25, and Wes liked him immediately.
A company of rangers couldn't solve this town's problems.
Yeah, be a little more specific.
Wes told Tom of all the troubles he'd been having with the Sandlin gang.
I've ridden this border as thoroughly as a man can do it, and it makes no difference where I am. The outlaws are always somewhere else, and when they strike, they're back across the border before I can get to them. I reckon you're aware that you're not allowed to cross the river?
Yeah, that's the first thing I was told.
Two elements must come together. First, they have to be lured across the river, and then we need some idea as to where they are. They're over here plenty often, but I've never been able to get to them. I never know where they'll cross.
Maybe we could set up a trap, enough bait to bring them to a specific location. Are they partial to cattle or horses?
Horses.
Now, suppose we had a holding pen and in it 50 or more horses. Wouldn't that draw them across the river?
I reckon it would. It might be the only way to draw them to a specific place. Even then, we'd have to stake it out day and night.
Exactly. But wouldn't that be better than constantly riding the border, never knowing when or where they're going to strike?
It would. It's the best proposal I've heard.
We'll begin by riding to the different ranches and asking for horses. We'll ask each rancher to contribute what he can, along with necessary hay and grain. Horses will be kept only as long as it takes to lure the outlaws across the river.
While we're asking for horses to bait the trap, I believe we should ask for men to ride after the outlaws. I've heard there may be 30 or more outlaws in the Sandlin Gang. That's heavy odds, even for a ranger.
Heavy odds for anybody. We'll definitely need help.
I think then you'll find out just how much folks around here want to be rid of the Sandlin Gang. I've heard that Sandlin has a standing reward of 100 pesos paid to any of his men who can prove he killed someone who took up arms against the gang.
Well, I can see the deck is pretty well stacked against us. But if nobody's willing to join us in the fight, we'll have to risk it alone. Trouble is, we'll be risking a holding pen full of borrowed horses. Something goes wrong and they're lost, there'd be hell to pay. And not just here, but in Austin.
If there's just you and me against the entire Sandlin Gang, the very last thing we'll have to worry about is the horses. We'll both be shot dead.
Well, tomorrow, we'll start calling on ranches.
Tom Webb and Wes visited 3 ranches without gathering a single horse, and the sun was less than an hour high when Wes and Webb returned to town.
I still think your plan's a good one, but none of these people are willing to risk even one horse. Where do we go from here?
Well, tomorrow, we'll call on the mayor and the town council. Hell, even a ranger can't perform miracles. If the ranchers won't cooperate, then the town will have to supply the necessary horses.
That I'll have to see. They're quick to give you hell when outlaws steal and kill, but nobody's willing to lift a hand to help.
After supper, when it was too dark to be seen, Wes went out on the front porch and sat on the steps. Nathan got up and followed, leaving Molly Harrell glaring at him. He said nothing, taking a seat at the other end of the steps. If there was a conversation, Wes would have to begin it.
How well do you know Harley Stafford?
And pretty well. We were in the war together. After that, I lost track of him until I found him again in Deadwood, Dakota territory.
That's where Hickok got killed.
Yes, I was there. Wild Bill was a friend of mine.
I read about him. I wondered if any of it was true.
Probably not. He liked to laugh, to drink, and to gamble. In Denver, after a saloon fight, I spent the night in jail with him.
Is it true that Jesse James was shot from behind by a member of his own gang?
It's true. Robert Ford did it for the reward.
Whatever Jesse James was, Robert Ford is still a coward. What became of him?
He's looked on with contempt everywhere he goes. I hear he's on tour with a stage company, telling how he shot Jesse James, but it's not working out. He's been run off the stage just about everywhere.
I read the newspaper stories about Ben Thompson and King Fisher being ambushed. Did you know either of them?
I knew them both. I spent the day with them in Austin the day before they were killed.
Nobody went after their killers?
I was there the next day, but there was no evidence.
But you did try.
Yes, I tried.
Man never has enough friends.
I agree. Most of mine are dead.
But you have a dog. I've seen Granny feeding him.
Well, that's empty. His daddy was Cotton Blossom, a blue tick hound from Virginia.
As though on cue, Empty trotted up the steps and sat down between them. Nathan lunged at Wes and the two of them went off the steps together. Despite his poor position, Nathan came up with his Colt. Wes came up as well. As quickly as it had begun, it was all over. Empty had taken refuge in the shadows of the porch, and he trotted down the steps.
They're gone, or they're dead. Otherwise, Empty would warn us.
He saved us. But how did you know?
That was his somebody's out there with a gun growl. He saved me more times than I can remember. Come daylight, we'll go out there and look around.
Wes? Nathan?
We're all right, Granny.
Renita came to Wes and stood beside him, trembling. But Nathan didn't see Molly. The next morning, after breakfast, Nathan and Wes went outside to search the area from which the gunfire had come.
They crept up on foot, depending on the darkness.
If they were part of the Sandlin Gang, they'd have to leave their horses somewhere.
Likely in the livery. They probably hoofed it back to town and spent the night at one of the hotels.
I hadn't thought of that. Since I don't know who's a member of the gang, they can ride in and out of town as they please.
That further allows them to spy on you, knowing your every move before you make it.
Later, Texas Ranger Webb spoke to Wes in his office.
I heard the shooting last night, but I had no idea you were the target.
I was. Nathan Stone and me were on the porch at the Borden house, and we both returned fire, but we missed them all.
Is that the Nathan Stone I heard so much about?
I reckon. I don't know of any other.
He's highly respected among Texas Rangers. He tracked down and shot the varmint who ambushed Ranger Sage Jennings. I've heard he was the third oldest man in the Rangers, and that before he died, he gave Stone his shield with a 3 inscribed in the back. That's quite an honor.
Wes digested this new information in silence. At first, he hadn't thought too highly of Stone for having run away from the Sandlin gang. But after the attack the night before, and having seen Stone under fire, his opinion rapidly changed. Stone had told him only a little about himself, mostly about friends who were dead, and then only when Wes had pressed him. The man was no braggart, and his movements of the night before were testimony to his ability with a revolver. The dog had warned them only split seconds before the shooting had started, yet Stone had been able to save himself and Wes. Seconds before Wes had gotten off a shot, despite Stone's disadvantage, he'd come up shooting. There was all the evidence Wes Tremaine needed to believe that Nathan Stone had walked with the likes of Wild Bill Hickok, Ben Thompson, and King Fisher.
I reckon we'll know this morning if our plan using horses for outlaw bait's gonna be accepted.
I hope the town will go along with it. It's our only hope short of riding the border again.
El Paso, Texas, May 20th, 1884. There were 12 men on the town council, 11 of whom were present. Tom Webb took just 5 minutes explaining their proposal, and it required just 5 minutes more for Mayor Hutchins and the council to kill the idea.
We simply don't have the money.
Well, maybe you don't understand what we're proposing. All we want is maybe 50 horses we can keep in a holding pen to attract these outlaws. Nobody's asking you to buy these horses. They could be borrowed or rented stock to be returned when the need for them is done.
You do not understand the magnitude of what you're proposing. If we have no money to actually buy these animals, neither do we have the money to replace them should they be lost.
You're assuming the possibility that despite our efforts, the outlaws may actually take the horses.
Of course we are. By your own admission, you've been unable to deputize men who will assist you. We hear that the Sandlin gang may consist of 30 men or more. Who are the two of you to stand up against such a number?
The fact that the two of us are willing to take a stand should count for something.
Oh, it does. And don't think us ungrateful, but we are practical men. And there is the obvious risk that both of you will die, leaving us with the awesome responsibility of paying for the stolen horses.
We understand. The possibility of us being shot dead is of considerably less importance than how you hombres would pay for stolen horses.
Your sarcasm is unwarranted, Mr. Tremaine. Your request will be considered again on November 20th when the budget for the next fiscal year is proposed.
That's 6 months away. That's time enough for a lot of stock to be stolen and a lot of men to be killed.
The subject is closed until November 20th.
Wes and Tom Webb went out onto the streets.
I'm not surprised. Those varmints all come up for re-election November 13.
They're gambling there'll be no more rustling and killing between now and then. That could unseat a lot of them.
That's a comforting thought. But it's of no help to us now.
Too bad. I don't know how else to get these outlaws across the border so that we can get our hands on them.
I do. I'll ride over there and shoot a couple of them. The rest will follow me anywhere.
I can only remind you of what you once reminded me. Legally, we are not allowed to cross the border.
So I'll cross illegally. Will the Sandlin gang call on the Rangers and have me arrested?
No. They'll do exactly what you expect. They'll go after you with fire in their eyes and guns in their hands. But how do you plan to find them? An entire army can hide in the wilds of Mexico and never be rooted out.
I'll let them know I'm coming and let them find me. Nathan Stone gave me an idea. He said Sandlin's bunch probably has spies right here in town. I'll spread the word that I'm going after them, and they'll be looking for me.
My God, with that kind of sand, you should be a Texas Ranger.
I was, but I gave it up. Now I can do what I must.
You'll scare the hell out of Hutchins and the town council. They'll be expecting trouble from Washington if you're caught or killed.
It's up to me to see that I'm not caught or killed. What I aim to do will be done long before the next meeting of the town council.
Nobody had to warn Wes Tremaine of the hazards of what he proposed. While planning word of his intentions in various saloons for the benefit of the outlaws, he carefully avoided speaking of his plans at Granny Boodlow's. Better that none of them knew what he proposed to do until it was done. He allowed the outlaws a week to learn of his coming, and when he rode out at dawn, only Tom Webb was aware of his dangerous mission. Old Mexico, June 2nd, 1884. Crossing the Rio Grande, Wes rode eastward for what he believed was 10 miles. He dared not get too far into this wild country, lest he be trapped. The outlaws knew the land, while he did not. He rode carefully, watching his back trail and the terrain ahead, but saw nobody. Finally, he wheeled his horse and rode back the way he had come. And reaching the point where he had crossed the river, he followed it westward a dozen miles. Still, he saw no riders, no evidence that the outlaws had taken the bait. Frustrated, he rode on across the river, and on the Texas side found Tom Webb waiting.
I can't understand it. I gave them a week to get the word.
Well, they got it. They must have suspected a trap. They have to be a lot more convincing than that.
But others had gotten the word as well. Renita and Wes had a falling out all over again, while Molly Harrell regarded Nathan as though she suspected he'd had a hand in it. Finally, Wes was called before the town council, where he was censured for violation of federal law.
You could well have caused an international incident, leaving the town of El Paso liable for penalties from Washington. How dare you represent us in such a manner?
This is your lucky day. As of now, I'm through representing this town in any manner.
Removing his badge, he dropped it into a pitcher of water on the mayor's desk. Then he walked out. Tom Webb, who hadn't attended the meeting, was waiting for him.
You have the look of an hombre that just told somebody to go to hell.
13 somebodies. The mayor and his coyote council.
You have the right idea. They'll ask for help, but they'll do nothing. And then tie our hands so we can do nothing. Now, I'm riding back to Austin, telling them what's going on here. The Rangers can take me off this assignment or take my badge.
I'm finished. The Sandlin gang can have El Paso for breakfast as far as I'm concerned.
There was excitement at Granny Boodlow's when Wes broke the news.
Now that you can't be accused of running from the Sandlin gang, there is no reason why we can't go somewhere else.
No, I reckon they've given up on me.
After supper, for the first time in weeks, Molly Harrell sought out Nathan, and she had a question for him.
Now that the danger from the Sandlin gang is past, can't we leave here?
I suppose we can.
But the running feud with the Sandlin gang wasn't over. A week after Wes had quit and a new town marshal, Buchanan Reynolds, had been appointed by the mayor and the town council, the outlaws struck again. They rode through town shooting out windows, and before they left, they took every horse from the horse barn near the wagon yard. The new town marshal hadn't fired a shot. Short tempers returned to Granny Boodlow's as Renita and Molly became more intense in their efforts to persuade Wes and Nathan to leave El Paso.
No, I aim to stay a while, through Christmas anyway.
The town remained quiet. 2 days before Christmas, Wes and Renita were riding to the general store. Granny Boodlow and Molly Harrell followed in a buckboard, needing to replenish supplies for the holiday. There were several vacant store buildings on the edge of town, and from the flat roof of one, Wes just had time to make out the barrel of a rifle. The first slug caught Wes in the upper left arm. The second stung his cheek. In an instant, he was off his horse and running toward the store building. The bushwhacker tried to escape, but he had waited too long. The roof sloped toward the back of the building, and the killer dropped to the ground. Wes had him dead to rights. Wes returned to his horse, blood dripping from his left elbow.
You're hurt!
Nothing serious. I'll have the doc patch me up. Granny, Molly, there was only one, and I got him. Go ahead to town. I'll report to the new town marshal.
The next morning, the Sandlin gang sent another message. Lead slammed into the front door at Granny Boodlow's.
It's safe to go out. That was a warning for some reason.
Wes nodded at Nathan, then opened the door and looked out. But there was nobody in sight. Then he saw the dagger driven into the door. It secured a piece of paper upon which a grim message had been scrawled.
We are coming for you.
Wes dropped the warning on the dining table. Let them all read it and give him hell. He no longer cared.
Wes, it's not too late. Can't we just ride away?
No. They've called me out, and I'm going.
Taking a second Colt, he shoved it under his belt. And with his Winchester under his still-bandaged arm, he went to saddle his horse.
Please, isn't there something we can do to stop it?
Only he can stop it, and he'll die before he'll run.
Nathan started down the hall to a room he no longer shared with Molly, but this time she followed him. His Winchester leaned in a corner, and he made sure it was fully loaded. He then buckled on the Buscadero rig and its two deadly Colts. From his saddlebag, he took shells and began filling his pockets.
Damn it, it had to be him or me, didn't it?
I never said that.
No, you didn't have to. You've stayed here because of him, knowing that it would come to this. What I wanted didn't matter.
It mattered. But I owed him 18 years, and I don't have nearly enough time to make it up.
Nathan went into town. The main street appeared deserted, but at the western end of it stood West Tremaine. The bushwhackers were hidden at intervals along the street. If Wes chose to advance, he would be caught in a deadly crossfire, a gauntlet of lead. Empty had followed Nathan, and from the corner of his eye he could see the dog as he kept close to the buildings along the street. The eyes of the outlaws were on West Tremaine, and as they prepared to fire, they moved to better positions. Well within range, Nathan opened fire with the Winchester. He cut down three of the outlaws before the others turned on him. The slug broke Nathan's left arm, and he dropped the Winchester. He drew his right-hand Colt. The other end of the street, West Tremaine was running. He saw Nathan fall to his knees, saw dust puff from his shirt as the slugs tore into him. Nathan dropped the empty Colt, and managing to reach the weapon on his left hip with his good right hand, he dropped another of the outlaws. He fired once more, the slug kicking up dust a few yards ahead of him. Finally, the Colt sagged in his weary hand and dropped to the dusty street. Bleeding from a dozen wounds, dying, Nathan Stone fell across the weapons that had served him so well. What remained of the Sandlin gang rode away. Wes Tremaine walked slowly toward Nathan, but he paused, for Empty was already there. He stood ready to defend this man with whom he had traveled the long trails, a master who could no longer defend himself. That was the scene that greeted Molly Horrell, Renita, and Granny when they arrived on the buckboard.
Nathan!
Molly stepped down to the dusty street and ran to Nathan. Empty backed off, allowing her to kneel beside him. When there were no more tears, she looked up and her eyes met those of West Tremaine, those ice blue eyes that were Nathan Stone's.
Why? Why did he do it? This wasn't his fight.
Oh, but it was. He tried to make up for 18 years today. Your mother never wanted you to know, and he respected her wishes, but you deserve to know. Nathan Stone was your father.
Wes still held the Winchester, and he dropped it in the dust at his feet. He dropped to his knees. He felt tears roll down his dusty cheeks. When he finally got to his feet, he stood looking up toward the rising sun.
They're gonna die. I swear before God they'll die. I'll hunt them down to the last man.
Nathan's body was taken to Granny Budlow's, where he spent his last night in her parlor.
We bury him behind the house. He one of us, and he sleep forever there.
Nobody slept that night as Nathan lay dead in the parlor. Molly told Wes all she knew about Nathan Stone.
He has friends he wanted telegraphed. One is Barnabas McQueen in New Orleans. Another is Byron Silver at the Attorney General's office in Washington. And in Dodge City, there's Foster Hagerman and Harley Stafford.
You can contact the others. But let me telegraph Foster Hagerman and Harley Stafford. They're my friends. And I especially want them to know who I really am.
Then address the telegram to Omega 3. It's what Nathan wanted. I know he'd want you to have his Winchester and the Colts, because they were given to him by Captain Sage Jennings of the Texas Rangers. There's a ranger shield that belonged to the captain and a watch given to him by Byron Silver. He has a considerable amount of money in the bank, and that's yours too.
No. I want the other things, but I want you to have the money.
Empty had howled most of the night, and had to be shut up in the house until Nathan had been buried. Wes already had his horse saddled and waiting, and the boot was Nathan's Winchester, and Wes had the Buscadero rig with its twin Colts belted around his own lean middle.
Turn Empty loose, Granny. I'd like to see him again before I go.
Empty came out and sat down at the head of Nathan's grave, and he didn't object when Wes ruffled his ears. Wes then turned to face Renita.
I'll be back if you'll wait. I'm taking my father's weapons in his name, and I must pay a debt for him.
I'll wait.
Wes mounted his horse and rode away. While Wes wasn't aware of it, the mournful howls of the hound drifted back over the years to that long-ago time in Virginia, when Cotton Blossom, Empty's sire, had howled over the remains of Malachi, an old black man who had long served Nathan Stone's family.
He lost.
But Empty had a choice to make, and as Cotton Blossom had done so long ago, he made it. He trotted a few steps along the way that Wes had ridden, then paused, looking back, and then continued on his way. In the distance, Wes reined up, waiting for him.
Wes, you're truly the son of Nathan Stone. You could never have been anything else. God help you as you cross that river into Cord Sandlin's empire.
Trail of the Gunfighter, Autumn of the Gun is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1996, Ralph Compton, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Joel David Santner, Casey Platt, Daniel Sontag, Michael Glenn, Tony Nam, Christopher Graybill, Eva Wilhelm, Alyssa Wilmoth, Gary Tells, Michael John Casey, David Coyne, Christopher Sheeran, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, Kimberly Gilbert, Nanette Savard, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Scott McCormick, Drew Copas, Patrick Bussink, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Jeff Allen, Nick DePinto, Ren Casey, Thomas Keegan, Tracy Oliveira, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Johann Detweiler. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Patrick Stratton. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Ralph Compton's Trail of the Gunfighter, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers and Sons of Texas series, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Kiss! Kiss, my darling! Come inside!
I remember some things. Others, not so much. And some things I only remember too late.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Croix's
Jill Kismet.
I'm for sale, Pericles. Bid high.
Book 6.
Angel Town.
Go to Hyperion. You can be our avenging hand.
What do you remember?
Saul, is he all right?
Kiss!
I'm afraid either way, Davey.
My children! Now is the hour of our glory!
Available now in Graphic Audio. The warded man stalks the night, slaying demons with the newly discovered wards of power. But now, a new threat is rising. An old friend, now a bitter enemy. And he has in his possession a weapon that could unite all humanity, or tear it to pieces. The Desert Spear. Witness the rise of Amon Jardir in the Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear. Available now in Graphic Audio.
Now we can invade the Green Lands.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.